This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Discover game-changing technologies that are set to disrupt the year ahead. From bioengineering and the ethics of Gen AI to tech-driven sustainability, the HCL Tech Trends Report provides strategic insights that will help drive innovation and shape the future of your business. Hear the thoughts of global leaders and gain valuable insights that unlock the power of cutting-edge technology. Click on the link to download this report now.
Welcome to The Rest Is Money with me, Steph McGovern.
And with me, Robert Peston. What have you been up to, Steph?
Well, I have braved going back into the sea. I used to go in the sea loads because I live, as you know, on the coast up in Tynemouth, the beautiful northeast of England coast. And I used to go in the sea quite a lot as a health thing. But then
that's really unhealthy. Yeah. I mean, how was it swimming with poo?
I know. Well, this is it. Then I stopped because I was stressed about all the poo in the water because I kept looking at those maps where it showed you and a lot of the beaches, well, you know, a lot of the beaches around the whole country, I've got this massive problem with poo.
I have to say, you're looking very healthy. So you obviously did find some clean water.
This is a radioactive glow I've got, I think. But this is a big issue. I mean, this is a massive catastrophe. The fact that any of us even have to think about whether it's okay to go into our rivers or seas because there might be poo in it. And it's not just an environmental catastrophe now. This is a financial catastrophe as well. We're on the horizon of big problems for our water companies in this country. And in particular, we want to focus today on talking about that, don't we? And doing a special on it.
Yeah, we're talking about how the nation is swimming through sewage, not just you. And it's the huge scandal that the biggest water company, Thames Water, is actually on the verge of collapse. They're looking at whether they need to be rescued by the government. And there's an enormous amount of money at stake. But more than that, this happens at a time when not just Thames Water, but Thames Water's at the cutting edge of providing an appalling service. But all the water companies face enormous bills for sorting out the leaks that are way worse than they should be across the industry and dealing with the overflow of sewage, poo in your and my terms, into rivers and seas, yeah. Which is a national disaster. Do you want to just set the scene by telling us quite how important Thames Water
is? Yeah, so because obviously, you know, you don't get a choice over who your water company is. And Thames Water, as the name suggests, is, you know, the one that's mainly down south. It's 16 million customers. It's 25% of the population of England and Wales in terms of their customers. And therefore, this makes it the UK's largest water company. Now, you'll remember back in the 1980s that the, you know, utility companies, the water companies were privatised by Thatcher in England and Wales.
They were at the sort of tail end of that privatisation wave, 1989. And I was a Cub reporter. And I remember at the time just feeling anxious about this particular privatisation.
Why?
Because this goes, frankly, to the heart of why many would say privatisation for the water industry has been a disaster, which is it's impossible to have competition in water services. The whole point of privatisation, well, there were two points Thatcher would have said to having privatisation. One is she just believed that the state was a bad owner of businesses, that the private sector was just more efficient, more sensible. And therefore, one of the reasons she wanted to sell off these assets of the state was she just thought they would be run better in the private sector. And I think we can now look at a company like Thames Water, where we have this catastrophe of appalling services. And you've got to question whether that was the right judgment. But the other reason for privatizing was it should have been a method to introduce competition into an industry. And we've seen in energy and indeed in telecoms, so gas was privatized earlier than water, initially as a huge monopoly. But since then, there has been competition in that industry. There's definitely been competition in the telecoms industry. With a business like water, the pipes will inevitably be owned by a single entity in a particular area or region. And although there were always thoughts given to, could you sort of lease the pipes to a range of companies who would offer different water through the pipes to customers. I mean, in practice, it's a sort of mad idea. In the end, water is a natural monopoly. The owner of the pipes is a monopoly. And in the end, monopolies will rip us off if they are not subject to external oversight, regulation. And so the question around water, is always around, is it being regulated properly? And if it's being regulated properly, it would be just as good a business in the public sector as in the private sector. So this idea that privatizing was ever going to produce better services for us, I always thought was for the birds.
Yeah, because especially if you look at somewhere like Scotland, where they haven't privatized the water there. So it's Scottish Water which runs it, and they've invested record amounts in infrastructure, and their bills are actually lower than English companies. And on the whole, the water's healthier and cleaner.
That's a very good point. And although some of the Thatcher privatisation was replicated across the world, and actually in those days, the UK was a pioneer when it came to coming up with new structures for ownership. So telecoms are more or less privatised wherever you look. And we were pioneers as a country in that. We haven't, when it comes to water, been followed by other nations, and the vast majority of water businesses across the world are in state ownership. And it's interesting as well that another area where other countries haven't followed our lead, but where many would say our services are terrible, is rail.
Yes.
Right? Rail was privatized. We have, to use that technical phrase we occasionally use on this program, an absolutely shit service compared to most countries in the world. And a lot of that, I'm afraid to say, is to do with privatisation.
So let's talk about the ownership then. So when it was privatised, the debt was written off, wasn't it, for all the water companies? They were given a clean slate. They were given something like £1.5 billion in public money.
And let's just emphasise that for a second. In 1989, these water companies had no debt at all.
So if we're looking at Thames Water here, they started out, as you say, with no debt. But then since then, they have been borrowing off the scale, haven't they? And their various owners have got the company into massive amounts of debt. It's now something like £15 billion. And there's this whole argument about whether the structure of Thames Water, the ownership, is too complex, and that they've been paying out too much in dividends and not investing in the business.
And just remind people what dividends are.
Well, it comes from the Latin word dividendum, doesn't it? Which basically means something to be divided. So yeah, it's a proportion of the earnings being distributed amongst the shareholders.
I was very learned. You don't normally chip in with etymological explanations,
I like it.
This is definitely a new path we're going to be ploughing.
Yeah.
The other point to make here is that when you take on debt, you also have to pay interest. So the costs before you invest a penny for a business that is in the private sector in this way, the financial costs are very, very significant. The point about a business like Thames Water, it's important to sort of focus on this for a second. You're a natural monopoly, okay, which they are. You know that millions and millions of households, and indeed corporate customers, have to buy your services. We all need this. We got no choice, yeah, right? We have to pay for water. Okay. So whether you're an investor who puts in equity, you're a shareholder, or you're a lender, you look at a Thames Water and you just say, this is just a wonderful stream.
Yeah, it's guaranteed.
Right? Pretty much guaranteed. And this is just a sort of fact of life if you're a private sector investor. What you're thinking about is, how do I get the maximum amount out, right? You're not some sort of public-spirited institution thinking about, how do I provide a service that is going to make the nation better off? You're thinking about, how do I get as much money out as possible? And that's just, I mean, you know, as you know, I'm a great fan of markets. I'm a great fan of the private sector, but one shouldn't be naive about the motives of people who put money into businesses.
But right? And also, in when we're talking about Thames Water, you know, the shareholders and people like that include the Chinese and Abu Dhabi sovereign wealth funds, don't they?
So Thames Water's got 9 shareholders. There's a unit of the Abu Dhabi Investment Fund. There's China Investment Corporation. That's, let's be clear, that's an arm of the Chinese state, an arm of the Chinese government. We've got the university's superannuation scheme here in the UK. So that's the pensions of university teachers. And we've also got the Ontario Municipal Employees Retirement System. And I'm sure Ontario municipal employees, that's people working in local government in Ontario, I'm sure they're lovely people. But in the end, all they want out of Thames Water, or indeed any of their investments, is a high return. They don't really care about the quality of water and the quality of our rivers and seas here in the UK. And in fact, let's just talk about this in terms of the whole industry, right? So 70, 80 billion pounds worth of debt accumulated by the whole industry. You've talked about, depending on how you measure it, either 15 billion pounds of debt or 18 billion pounds of debt in Thames Water on its own. And dividends, almost identical in almost all cases. So depending on what period you look at from 1989, you know, there have been periods when dividends taken out of that period have been more than the debt that they've incurred. You know, at the moment it's sort of roughly the same. And so what you're looking at is a situation where debts have been incurred in practice, because money doesn't know where it's going, debts have been incurred in effect to pay shareholders, leaving these businesses in a financially much weaker state. And whatever they may say, which they do, that they have invested billions in upgrading services, if you look at the tens of billions that are currently required to prevent our rivers and our coastline from becoming utterly toxic because of the sewage emissions. And if you look at the risks that we have when we have periods of drought, to the water being turned off because of just the sheer scale of leaks that are in the system, nobody can argue that enough has been invested. You know, way too little has yeah. been invested in essentially getting the poo out of, you know, out of our loos in a safe way and providing us with high quality running water.
It's worth actually just talking about this sewage spill stuff so people understand it, because you might be thinking, why on earth, how are they even allowed to put sewage into, you know, our rivers and our seas and everything anywhere? So the way it works is water companies are sometimes allowed to spill sewage into open water following heavy rainfall. And that is basically to stop the system being overloaded. But the problem is these spills now are happening far too often. So there was something like 300,000 monitored, so they might, you know, the ones that they actually know about, 300,000 monitored spill events in England in 2022. That is 24 times higher than it was in 2016. Like, that is an incredible leap. And the reason why, as Robert, you've just been saying, this is the lack of investment in the infrastructure. It means that the companies are now relying on the sewer overflow system too much. So rather than it being for extreme rainfall, for emergencies, it's just becoming more of a regular thing that happens. And so this is why we've got this awful situation we're in, where we've got shit in the seas and shit in the rivers.
I mean, and E. coli, and, you know, there were some statistics out the other day about the number of people who are being taken to hospital with infections related to swimming in rivers and seas. And it's risen very, very sharply. And this is a national scandal. I mean, I'm old enough to remember where British people would turn their noses up at going to France or Italy, and, you know, you couldn't drink the water allegedly, and the loos were apparently, you know, British people would say were disgusting. And now we are the sick person of Europe when it comes to water and sewage. And this is national shame.
There's some really interesting statistics as well on how our different countries in the UK compare as well. So if you look at the water quality for England, where it is privatised, 16% of what they call them surface water bodies. So it's like 16% of our rivers, seas and lakes have good ecological status or higher. If you compare that to Scotland, where obviously it's in public ownership, it's 48% there. Northern Ireland's 31%. And again, it's publicly owned in Northern Ireland. But there's a big difference there as well. So that just shows it's hard facts on the fact that private ownership hasn't worked. Right, I think we should turn the taps off for a moment and stop talking about water and have a little break, and then, start back again in a couple of minutes.
See you in a minute.
Discover game-changing technologies that are set to disrupt the year ahead. From bioengineering and the ethics of Gen AI to tech-driven sustainability, the HCL Tech Trends Report provides strategic insights that will help drive innovation and shape the future of your business. Hear the thoughts of global leaders and gain valuable insights that unlock the power of cutting-edge technology. Click on the link to download this report now.
We've been doing a lot of kicking
of the
owners. And actually, we should mention, special mention for an Australian investment firm called Macquarie, which owned Thames Water for a long time and was responsible, took an enormous amount of money out and loaded that company up with huge amounts of debt before passing it on to the current shareholders. We've talked about Abu Dhabi and China and actually the UK. But we can start by, which we have been, kicking the private sector owners. But I think it is very, very, very important also to recognise the failure of the regulator, Ofwat, right? Ofwat exists to stop this kind of debacle from happening. It is supposed to put in place financial structures that mean that these companies are stable, and it is supposed to keep bills down, and it is supposed to make sure that enough is invested so that the quality of the service is decent enough. Now, arguably, the one thing they would say is that prices to consumers may be lower than they would otherwise have been under public ownership, although this is quite difficult to prove. And the one thing that they would always insist on is that the prices we pay have been kept lower. But that is a complete sort of waste of time if, when we're not getting the service that we deserve, whether it comes to sewage or running water. And it is also genuinely terrifying that they have allowed a company like Thames Water to put in place the most complex, opaque financial structure. So we've got this extraordinary situation where we've got this range of shareholders we've talked about, but we've also got a debt structure that is terrifying. We've got this top company called Kemble.
I want to ask you about this because they have this really complicated debt structure, don't they, with different tiers of debt. There's this other, you know, we've been talking about liability-driven investments before, which, you know, another acronym of complicated stuff. And then this, in this business, they've got whole business securitization, which is their complicated debt thing. It's a mind melt.
It is a mind melt. We need to talk about some events that are relevant to all of that, and then I'll talk you through how I see the structure. So at the top, we got Kemble. Kemble issued some bonds. It has not paid the interest on those bonds, so it has breached its covenants, and the price of those bonds has totally collapsed. Beneath that, there's a whole series of bonds that are in the name, not of Kemble, but in the name of Thames Water. And they are also trading way below their issue price because investors are really worried about whether or not the interest on that will continue to be paid, okay? And you mentioned this weird concept of whole business securitization. This is where the security, when we were talking about financial structures in the context of the Liz Truss debacle, and we were talking about the fragility of pension funds during that debacle, we talked about this concept of collateral, which is the assets backing any particular debt.
Yep.
There is this weird but really quite widespread structure across the utility industry of whole business securitization, where basically the debt is secured against the whole company. But it means that bondholders have a claim on the whole business, but not on individual assets. And again, there are now questions being raised if the whole business collapses, right, whether or not these lenders will get their money back. Now, the reason I'm sort of going slightly on and on about this particular structure is because these uncertainties around Thames Water and this form of raising money has big implications for other utility companies, and also big implications, for example, for the government's current plans to invest in really important industries like nuclear. So if you look at the nuclear industry, they use this whole business securitization structure to raise lots of money. There is considerable anxiety in government that if Thames Water collapses, they won't be able to raise the money for these big nuclear investments that they're obsessed with.
Because people will think they
don't
work.
Because people won't provide
work,
the money in that way anymore, right? And it's quite difficult to know where the money will come from in those circumstances. So it is hard to overstate the significance of this mess, not just for the water industry, not just for Thames Water, but for wider ambitions to invest in power, nuclear, and across the utility sector.
So in terms of what happens next then, because there's a bit of a, I suppose, debate going on between Thames Water and Ofwat at the minute about whether they're going to improve these plans to spend, you know, something like £20 billion on environmental issues and what that implications going to be for customers' bills, and they're trying to agree that at the moment. If that gets sorted, will that then mean it will be all right for a bit, or is this just pushing the can down the road?
So the honest answer is we don't know, but because this is sort of, you know, what is that awful phrase, three-dimensional chess? There's a lot going on. So on the one hand, as you say, there are negotiations with all the water companies about how many billions and billions and billions they've got to invest over the next 5 years and what kind of return they're going to be allowed to make. And the return means how much our bills are going up.
Yeah.
And we're looking at bill increases over the next few years of, you know, 40%,
50%,
depending on ultimately where it ends up in terms of this negotiation. And it's all very well, however, to say, okay, they're having a negotiation on something as fundamental as that, and surely everything will be all right. Actually, what one shouldn't forget is that the shareholders in Thames Water came up with this terrifying statement the other day. They were supposed to put in 500 million quid, and they said they wouldn't because Thames Water was, in their language, uninvestable, right? In other words, they were simply saying this is 500 million going down the drain because they couldn't see how they could make an acceptable return on the basis of the enormous amounts that has to go in and what they thought the regulator would allow them to earn. And then there's a separate issue, and I'd be interested to know whether you have any sympathy with them on this. Right. The other thing that they hate is the fact that because, for example, they have failed when it comes to stopping sewage leaking into rivers and seas, they're being fined. Right. And some of these fines are really quite substantial. And the thing about those fines is that is more money being taken out of the business. And therefore, effectively means when you've got all this interest to pay and you've got all these dividends to pay, it's
less money
available to invest. But basically, what they want to see is the money that's being taken out in fines used to invest in the business to improve services. And I guess...
Who wants that?
The shareholders, the shareholders and investors, right? And I guess you could come up with a way of doing that that would mean, let's just say there's a £100 million fine. I completely understand why the government and the regulators are concerned about that money going into investment, because they might think, oh, well, that will just benefit people who failed, the owners of these businesses, and therefore it's not really a punishment. But actually, if you ring-fenced that 100 million quid and you said that actually it would get a super normal return from the, you know, the revenues that the business is earning, and that would flow back to taxpayers, that return, that might be a way of both punishing the company and making sure that the fines actually encourage investment rather than discourage investment. So what do you think about that when you fine water companies, they have even less money to invest?
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing, isn't it? But we know that it's money that is the motive in all of this. This is what they're bothered about. We've got to a point, haven't we, where it's just gone too far. So now it feels like the only solution is going to be government money, taxpayers' money being put in to help, because they now are never going to have enough to invest in infrastructure, and it's only going to get worse and worse. My bigger issue, though, is that how it got to this point, how have the government, how have regulators allowed a company to basically borrow money to pay out in dividends and get themselves in incredible amounts of debt. Again, this feels like another failing in the financial system where investment strategies are made so complicated that people don't understand them. But then when you break it down to the basics, basically money's being borrowed to pay dividends, to give people who've, you know, took equity in a business some money for that equity. But yet the people who lose here are all the customers. And all the people, well, actually everyone, because there's shit in our water. But I just don't understand why regulators can't step in early. I feel like every time we talk about why a company is in trouble, it's either terrible management or it's something to do with some complicated financial product that has some acronym that takes a PhD to understand what it is.
And when you see it in that way, what you can essentially deduce is that it is more or less mad that this was ever put into the private sector, because it shows you that within the public sector, simply paying a decent amount for our water and sewage services was enough money to finance the investment that's been made. Because essentially, if the borrowing has, you know, financed dividends, you could have just taken all of that out of the picture and you would have had viable water and sewage businesses. And that is, in a way, the biggest scandal of this 30-year history of privatisation.
I agree.
I mean, another absolutely shocking fact about the inadequacy of investment is there hasn't been a single substantial reservoir built since the early 90s. I mean, it's incredible. We know, because of climate change, that the whole configuration of when the rain's going to come, where it's going to fall, you know, is changing. And yet, not only have we not fixed the leaks, but we haven't even built, you know, for a growing population, another reservoir.
But that's the same as rail, though, isn't it? Like, it's absolutely doing my head in how the connectivity isn't there for large parts of the country, like that the train service is so shit, and it's because of the Victorian, you know, system we've got that's never been properly updated, that can't cope with the capacity. And these tracks being used for more and more freight are also being shared with people who are, you know, travelling on trains generally for work or whatever else. And there just isn't, it's just not working. And there's going to come a point where this is all just going to grind to a halt, isn't there?
Yeah, it's not just rail, it's also electricity. We haven't got a national grid that is able to get the power from these new renewable sources, whether it's wind farms, whether it's solar. We're just, you know, wherever you look, we don't have the infrastructure that we need.
Coming back to the maps, because I am quite, you know, obsessed with the maps of where the sewerage is going and all things like that. You would think, wouldn't you, that all of these water companies would have incredibly detailed maps of their systems, of their pipe systems, of everything else. Did you know two of our biggest water companies, Thames Water and Southern Water, only map the pipes as they work on them? So it means they're a massive part of the network that have unchecked. They don't even know where they are, these pipes. I mean, that's a joke in itself as well. I mean, AI could do this for you, surely. And in percentage terms, Thames are saying it's like nearly a third of their network that isn't mapped. And for Southern Water, it's 40%. That's a massive amount where they have no idea what's going on with it because they don't even know what it is.
Amazing. One final point. I do think we've let successive governments off the hook. Right. What we've had with regulation across the piece over the sort of 30 years where we've had privatizations and responsibilities for keeping these privatized companies, honest and decent, has been shipped to regulators. In that period, it means that ministers have sort of turned a blind eye to these looming catastrophes. We saw it in rail and we've seen it in water. And that's, you know, that's just wrong, right? These are, government retains a moral and to a large extent, legal responsibility for making sure that these services are fit for purpose. And truthfully, we've had 14 years of Tory government, but a lot of this also happened on the watch of the previous Labour government. There has to be a total rethink about the attitude of governments and the responsibilities of governments in these circumstances, because the long wave of privatised ownership in some really important industries has failed the British people.
I mean, this feels like an absolute catastrophe, but could it get worse, like financially?
Look, there are two things to say here. One is that Thames Water constantly says at the moment it's got enough money to keep going till the middle of next year, that services are not going to be impaired in the short term. But, you know, if I look at this, I honestly can't see how on earth this stays in the private sector. And there must be a huge risk that it goes into this special administration regime, which is effectively a form of nationalisation. What is difficult to evaluate at the moment is whether or not that will turn into temporary nationalisation or permanent nationalisation. And at the end of the day, that it will be a political choice for whoever is in power at the moment that it happens. It's very unclear whether that decision will be taken before the election or after the election. But at the end of the day, this is about huge politics. Does the government feel that this is a business that would be better run in the public sector? If it goes into this special form of administration, will they then use that to try and put in place new private sector ownership? These are decisions that I think both Labour and the government are currently running away from, but they haven't got very long to make up their minds about all of this. You know, I've argued that privatisation of the water industry, light rail, was a mistake and has been a disaster. Many people would say this is the moment to wake up to that and reverse it, but we should be under no illusion. When a business like Thames Water has £18 billion of debts and billions of pounds that it needs to invest over the coming years, there are questions about whether the British government can afford to own this thing. So, you know, this is a huge and important story, and we will be coming back to it.
Right. Well, I think we should wrap things up there. That brings us to the end of another special on The Rest Is Money. If you've got an idea for one you think we should do, by the way, do let us know. You can email us restismoney@gmail.com or send in via our socials as well. Any comments or thoughts or questions or whatever else you have, just search The Rest Is Money and you will find us. But that's it from us. I'm doing Have I Got News For You this week, actually. So,
are you ever going to say happy birthday?
Oh, my God. It's not today, is it?
Well, it is today in terms of when people will be listening to it.
So yeah, but not in
You let me down, Steph.
Right, okay. My future self is saying happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, you miserable old sod.
See you soon.
Bye.